Well, as we continue our study of the presidents and down through the history of the United States, the spiritual lives of each of our commanders in chief, we come to the 17th president, Andrew Johnson. He was born in Raleigh, North Carolina on December 29th, 1808. And as we have done these past weeks, as we work through this together, we talk about these facts concerning them as we look at some of the basis of what made them them. And so he became president because of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, but he only served out the term, and he was the first individual to be impeached as president. Well, he escaped from indentured servitude when Andrew Johnson was only three. His father, Jacob, died, and his mother, Mary McDonough Johnson, remarried and later sent him and his brother out as indentured servants to a tailor named James Selby. The brothers ran away from their bond after 2 years, and on June 24th, 1824, Selby advertised in a newspaper a reward of $10 for anyone who would return the brothers to him. However, they were never captured. Well, Johnson never attended school. He never attended school at all. In fact, he taught himself to read. And once he and his brother escaped from their quote-unquote master, he opened up his own tailoring shop in order to make money. You can see his tailor shop at the Andrew Johnson National Historic Site in Greenville, Tennessee. On May 17, 1827, Johnson married Eliza McCardle, the daughter of a shoemaker, and the pair lived in Greenville, Tennessee. And despite having lost her father as a young girl, Eliza was quite well educated and spent some time helping Johnson increase his reading and writing skills. And together, the two of them had three sons and two daughters. But by the time that Johnson became president, his wife was an invalid, confined to her room all the time, and their daughter, Martha, served as hostess during formal functions. Well, he became a mayor at the age of 22. He opened his tailor shop when he was 19, and by the age of 22, he was elected mayor of Greenville, Tennessee. He served as mayor for 4 years. He was then elected to the Tennessee House of Representatives in 1835, and he later became a Tennessee state senator before being elected to Congress in 1843. He's the only Southerner to retain his seat upon secession. Johnson was the U.S. representative from Tennessee from 1843 until he was elected as governor of Tennessee in 1853, and then he became a United States Senator in 1857. And while in Congress, he supported the Fugitive Slave Act and the right to own enslaved people. However, when states started to secede from the Union in 1861, Johnson was the only Southern senator who did not agree. And because of this, he retained his seat. Southerners viewed him as a traitor. Ironically, Johnson saw both secessionists and abolitionists as enemies to the Union. And in 1862, Abraham Lincoln appointed Johnson to be the military governor of Tennessee. Then in 1864, Lincoln chose him to join the ticket as his vice president. And together they handily beat the Democrats. Initially, the conspirators in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln also planned on killing Andrew Johnson. However, George Axelrod, his supposed assassin, backed out, and Johnson was sworn in as president on April 15, 1865. He actually, talking about Johnson, he fought against the radical Republicans during Reconstruction. Johnson's plan was to continue with President Lincoln's vision for Reconstruction. They both thought it important to show leniency to the South in order to heal the Union. However, before Johnson was able to put his plan in motion, the radical Republicans in Congress had prevailed. They put into place acts that were meant to force the South to change its ways and to accept its loss, such as the Civil Rights Act of 1866. Johnson vetoed this and 15 other Reconstruction bills, all of which were overridden. The 13th and 14th Amendments were also passed during this time, freeing enslaved peoples and protecting their civil rights and liberties. Seward's Folly, Secretary of State William Seward, arranged in 1867 for the United States to purchase Alaska from Russia for $7.2 million. This was called Seward's Folly by the press and others who felt it was just foolish. However, it did pass and would eventually be recognized as anything but foolish for United States economic and foreign policy interests. And as has already been mentioned, he is the first president to be impeached. In 1867, Congress passed the Tenure of Office Act. This denied the president the right to remove his own appointed officials from office. And despite that act, Johnson removed Edwin Stanton, his Secretary of War, from office in 1868. He put war hero Ulysses S. Grant in his place. And because of this, the House of Representatives voted to impeach him, making him the first president to be impeached. However, because of the vote of Edmund G. Ross, kept the Senate from removing him from office. And after his term in office ended, Johnson was not nominated to run again and instead retired to Greenville, Tennessee. Well, we read in the book, The Presidents, which is a book by Ian Dale, the subtitle, 250 Years of American Political Leadership, we read this, the story of Andrew Johnson, a man routinely topping the list of worst presidents, is one of the tragic circumstance made worse by personal conviction and contradiction. It serves to enhance his predecessor's ideals by comparison and further mourn what could have been following the Civil War. Yes, yet it is also a cautionary tale about the tension between political failure, wrongdoing even, and constitutional redress. As such, the implications and lessons drawn from a president gladly forgotten by many have subsequently made him a talking point once more. Well, he grew up poor and illiterate, but developed a flair for political rhetoric. Identified with fellow Tennessean Andrew Jackson's limited government agenda and felt the impoverished southern states needed to be treated leniently with self-determination to help restore the Union. And the divide accelerated as public opinion in the South, in the North, grew stronger concerning the need to ensure the South fully acknowledged the errors of its ways. Progressives saw the president's light touch approach as emboldening state governments in the South to act as if the war had been fought over nothing. Well, we read in the book by Annette Gordon Reed, which is entitled Andrew Johnson, and gives us kind of an insight into Johnson's thoughts. Remember that his wife became an invalid by the time he was in office. It says this, Andrew Johnson has been on a determined march since boyhood to improve himself, to rise in society. And once he found his way into the arena, to rise to the greatest heights of the political system. Now, as he sat in the United States Senate, that system was coming apart after Abraham Lincoln's election to the presidency in 1860. What would become of Johnson if the Union should dissolve? And at 51 years old, he had given his adult life to politics. Described by one historian as a self-absorbed, lonely man, Johnson did not seem to have much more to him than his grinding ambition. There were Eliza and the children, though he spent large amounts of time away from them. Family was not the driving force or principal satisfaction in his life. That Eliza's delicate condition prevented her from traveling with him accounts for some of the separation, but it has been his choice to maintain a lifestyle in the face of her illness that required that the long separations from her and the rest of his family. Johnson was not the first and would not be the last public official to make this choice and then be forced to contemplate life outside of his chosen profession. There's a certain poignancy about a man who works so hard to get into the particular game only to find that the rules of that game had changed once he entered it. So we see this man who loves the Union, that wants things to stay together, but is bound by items that would push him to do things that shows where he stood when it came to the scriptures. He, from the book The Presidents and Their Faith by Grinder and Shaw, it says, Andrew Johnson is the first president of the United States who was not affiliated at all with any sort of church. Although it would seem he was indeed a Christian, throughout his life he was very clear that he believed in Christian tenets, but also that he was not religious at all. Apparently this meant that he was not evangelical or seemed to care nothing for the things of the church or for religious rites. His wife Elizabeth, however, was a Methodist, and he had many friends who were Methodist. He also attended the Methodist Church with his wife and family. It's clear that Johnson had no qualms with rights or belonging. He was a Mason of a very high degree and proud of this affiliation. Perhaps his Masonic relationships and works provided him with the sort of fraternity that churches provide for many others. But at one point, he was confronted by the fact that there is a minister who is also running against Johnson for a House seat, accused Johnson of being an infidel. And so Johnson responded with an open letter to the Freeman of the 1st Congressional District of Tennessee. He says this, quote, that the charge of infidelity as preferred against me in the late canvass is utterly and absolutely false from beginning to end, and that so far as the doctrines of the Bible are concerned, or the great scheme of salvation as founded, taught, and practiced by Jesus Christ himself, I never did entertain a solitary doubt. A belief in the pure and unadulterated principles of democracy is a belief in the religion of our Savior as laid down while here upon earth himself, rewarding the virtuous and meritorious without regard to station, to wealth, or distinction of birth. One of the principal tenets laid down in the great scheme of regeneration of man is democracy in its purity. That is to say, the just and pure are to be rewarded in heaven with crowns of glory. The unjust and vile sinner is to be punished in a hell where worm dieth not and the fire is never quenched, each rewarded unto their merits or demerits upon their own irresponsibility. My religious creed first, my democracy next, they are one and inseparably connected. God and my country first, God and my country last. So while this, end of quote, while this passionate statement may have been motivated only by politics, we nevertheless find here an interesting man who states clearly a belief in some sort of Christianity, but at the same time is willing for the sake of the nation to prevent even those of that same faith from using the United States government to make religious statements or to make dramatic religious stances. Well, John Wiley, in his book entitled The Faith of the Presidents, talks a little bit more about Andrew Johnson. He says he was a big-time advocate of the poor man, especially those in the South. He often pushed for economic policies that subsidized lower-income Southerners, which likely harkened back to his own upbringing as an impoverished child in Tennessee, learning to live without his father, who died while Andrew Johnson was only a toddler. Working his way up as a tailor, he eventually succeeded in local, state, and national politics. And Johnson was a Democrat in the Jacksonian sense, appealing to the populism of former President Andrew Jackson, but also favored unity over and against the splitting of the country between the United States and Confederate States of America. While boasting in one breath that he was the Moses of the colored men, he also troublingly declared in another, "This is a country for white men, and by God, as long as I am president, it shall be a government for white men." The Republican majority in Congress during his term as president wasn't on the same page as Johnson, having several of his vetoes overturned. Politically speaking, Andrew Johnson was an ineffective president who is perhaps best known as being the first president to face impeachment and barely escaped removal. Typically, biographers and political writers have focused on either the political or racial viewpoints of President Andrew Johnson, but his religious views have not often been highlighted. So we see his perspective of religion are notable, not just for the historical context, but also for evaluating the importance of the religious views today. You see, today, if you think about it, many Christians who say they love Jesus, but not the church. They say they believe in a personal God. They might even read the Bible, but they don't actively participate within a local congregation. And they believe their religion, perhaps even calling themselves Christian, is private rather than public. So when you and I look at Andrew Johnson, we seem to find that kind of thinking, a person that would love Jesus, but not the church. And he was critiqued for his lack of church affiliation. But then he responds, "As for my religion, it is the doctrine of the Bible as taught and practiced by Jesus Christ." And so that's what he rests in. And so it seems for Johnson, the most important feature of religion dealt with the treatment of the poor. And that also coincided with much of his political convictions. But he also believed in religious toleration. He argued in 1866, quote, "I intend to stand by the Constitution as the chief ark of our safety." And so he clings to that. He says, as a mariner clings to the last plank when the night and the tempest close around him. Elsewhere, he also commented on the religious freedom in America. Here religion, quote, "Here religion, released from political connection with the civil government, refuses to subserve the craft of statesmen and becomes in its independence the spiritual life of the people. Here toleration is extended to every opinion in the quiet certainty that truth only needs only a fair field to secure the victory," end of quote. So as he neared death in 1875, he wrote this, quote, "I have performed my duty to my God, to my country, and my family. I have nothing to fear in approaching death. To me, it is the mere shadow of God's protecting wing. Here I will rest in quiet and peace beyond the reach of Coligny's poisoned shaft, the influence of envy and jealous enemies, where treason and traitors or state backsliders and hypocrites in church can have no peace." So he believed, because he was a Freemason, he believed in a creator God, but as an unaffiliated theist, he never became a church member of any denomination. And if a person today were to follow in those steps, then there would be much room for concern, since the United States, since the New Testament clearly and consistently shows the responsibility for a Christian to be accountable to fellow believers by uniting with a local church. Johnson was a loner in the presidency, losing many battles to Congress, but he was also a loner in his faith. And we can appreciate that he cared about the poor, leaning into James 2, but we can also say that as we look at Ephesians 5:25, that tells us that Jesus loved the church, gave himself up for it, and we are called to do the same.